From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, part two in a series on rethinking education. As schools were forced into recess or transitioned into virtual learning earlier this year as the coronavirus pandemic enveloped the nation, President Trump last month said he wanted to see schools reopen for the new school year.
I would like to see the schools open, especially when you see statistics like this. We have great statistics on young people and on safety. So we would like to see schools open. We want to see the economy open.
I shared with the president's team that we should be rethinking rather than reopening public schools. And while still the focus is on public schools, the administration is now promoting school choice as a possible alternative.
If schools do not reopen, the funding should go to parents to send their child to public, private, charter, religious, or home school of their choice. The key word being choice. If the school is closed, the money should follow the student.
In part one of this series, we explored a host of reasons why parents should rethink public education. And you can listen to it at TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, I would recommend that you do so. FRC Senior Fellow Kathy Roos took us behind the closed classroom doors to reveal just what children are being taught. Now, from its origins until recently, sex education was treated as a public health topic. But in the wake of the Obama administration, aided by the nation's largest union, the National Education Association, comprehensive sex education is now permeating every aspect of the classroom. Also, expert and author Mary Rice Hassan connected the lawlessness on the streets with the radicalization that is now commonplace in America's classrooms. And educational transition expert Candace Duggar walked us through the process of coming out of the government educational system. But today we look at one of the options available to parents. It is not the only option, but it is one that is growing in popularity, homeschooling. In part three, we'll look at private school options, so know that there is more to come. But today we delve deeper into a movement that has grown significantly in the U.S. over the last 40 years. Now, prior to the Industrial Revolution, most education took place in the home. Education that included reading, writing, arithmetic, along with faith, morals, and social skills. The shift to public schools began rapidly at the turn of the 20th century, and by the 1970s, home education was all but extinct, with only about 13,000 home-educated students in the U.S. But that began to change in the 1980s and 90s as federal influence in education grew. In 1983, there were an estimated 93,000 students educated at home. In 1990, that number climbed to 275,000 to 1 million 7 years later, and 1.9 million in the year 2007. Earlier this year, the number stood at 2.5 million, but some are now predicting the numbers could grow by 500%, which could significantly alter the educational landscape of America, shifting power away from government-controlled schools and the industry that supports them into the hands of parents. We'll explore the why behind the growth of homeschooling, as well as taking on some of the myths associated with home education with Mike Donnelly, Senior Counsel and Director of Global Outreach for Homeschool Legal Defense. And how do you go about determining the best structure and curriculum for your children? Kathy Duffy, an expert on homeschool curriculum, she's been reviewing curriculum for the homeschool community since 1984, she'll join us. Also, a special guest will join us to talk about the trials and triumphs of the homeschool journey as a family. You won't want to miss this special interview. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it is at T. Perkins. All right, the school districts across the nation are rolling out a hodgepodge of reopening plans. The continued uncertainty and instability has some parents rethinking public education. And frankly, given what is happening on the streets of our nation, this rethinking could not come at a more critical time for our republic. Many families are rediscovering what was commonplace among our nation's founders, home education. While not an option for all, it can be an option for more families than you think, given the resources that are available today. But have more and more families over the last four decades chosen to educate their children at home, and why have they? Well, joining me now to talk about why parents are choosing homeschooling and the legal steps involved of how to go about it is Mike Donnelly. He is the senior counsel and director of global outreach for Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Tony. It's really great to be with you.
Well, I just want to jump right into this. Why are parents choosing homeschooling?
Well, as you mentioned, Tony, this is an unprecedented time in our nation's history, and so we're seeing unprecedented numbers and interest in homeschooling. Right now, the main driver for that, I think, has to be the coronavirus pandemic. People are not excited or enthusiastic about what options the schools are offering. People are not excited about their children wearing masks all day. They're not excited about the social distancing. They're not excited about trying to balance their own work schedule on Zoom and their kids' class schedule on Zoom. One day in school, 4 days out of school, 2 days in school, half days in school. There's so much uncertainty, and people want to have some certainty for their children. And homeschooling has always offered stability and certainty for children in probably the safest possible environment, which is their home.
Yeah, I know
people say why. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I know that to be true, even in conversations I've had with parents who've approached us and said, hey, can you point me in the right direction on homeschooling? The uncertainty here, we've just decided we're going to homeschool. So that we can have stability for our kids, and they don't have to wear the mask. They don't have to know whether or not they're going to school today, and it provides that stability.
It really does, and it's over the last 20 years or so, as you pointed out, homeschooling has grown exponentially in the last 40 years, and the reasons for people wanting to homeschool have changed somewhat. But one of the top reasons, and now the number one reason people give for wanting to homeschool their kids, is the environment in the schools, and that's safety related. The second reason people often give is because they're unsatisfied with the academic instruction in the schools. And thirdly, they want to make sure that they can teach their children what they believe, their values, their religion, their faith. And the fourth reason that's a growing reason among many people is their children have special needs. And the school, while it may try real hard to give children who have special needs or learning disabilities access to the curriculum, that's really difficult to do in an institutional environment. And what we're seeing, as we see with all children who flourish in a homeschool environment, because it provides an individualized, tailored education, that's especially helpful for children who have learning disabilities or other special needs.
Mike Donnelly, we also see the polling data that suggests that there are a lot of parents right now that are considering homeschooling as an option. In fact, if you look at some of these polls, we could be looking at a 500% growth in homeschooling in America. That's huge.
It's absolutely unprecedented, Tony, and it's amazing. It's hard to imagine, actually, 500% growth. But let me put some context around that. That would be if only 15% of new families, meaning families who weren't homeschooling, if 15% of families suddenly start homeschooling, that is 500% growth. Some people have said the numbers could be even higher than that, to 18, 25, even 40% when you look at some polls. But even if it's only 15%, and right now homeschooling is 3% of the population, you're looking at a total population of 10 million children. That's almost one-fifth of the total school-age population in the United States.
That would be a major shift in the educational landscape in America, shifting the power away from the public education system back into the hands of parents, just because of the sheer number, the percentage. You're talking about, close to 20% of parents homeschooling. That begins to see a titanic shift, I think.
Oh, it's incredible. It's really hard to even imagine what that would do to the educational landscape. It's been 180 years since the first public school started in Massachusetts. And, I think it is time for some transformation. I mean, homeschoolers have been very innovative and experimental. The new wave of homeschoolers are looking like they're going to be very creative and collaborative, and they're using new words like pandemic pods and micro schools. But these are new ideas, or new terminology, but not new concepts. I mean, homeschoolers have been doing co-ops and getting together to help each other out for many decades. So the things that we've been doing in homeschooling, embracing distance learning, small class sizes, having our kids go to university online or even community college earlier, these are the kinds of things that we really need to be talking about as a country, because there's no reason that kids need to be in school for as long as they have been, and in the way that they're doing.
And Mike, let me quickly, because I want to get to the how. How do you do this? But there's some more reasons here. When you look at the, say, the test scores of homeschool students, students educated at home, they're doing much better than their public school peers.
Well, that's true. The research for over decades has shown that homeschooled students on standardized tests of academic achievement perform 25 to 30 percentile points higher. That's percentile points. And all the research shows that they do better, at least as well as, and in most cases, better on all kinds of academic measures and also measures of socialization and civic engagement. So homeschooling is a really positive experience for kids. And it looks like it's going to be a great experience for a lot more people, which is exciting.
So, Mike Donnelly, the process, you know, a lot of schools don't like to let children go because there's money attached to each student. What does a parent need to do?
Well, that's true. And what parents need to do is, first of all, understand the laws in their state. And they can do that by going to hslda.org/laws. And we've got a lot of free information there that can help people understand the laws in their states. Most states have some kind of required compliance. You at least have to, in most states, tell the government that you're going to do it. If your child was enrolled in a public school, it's very wise for you to tell them that you are unenrolling so that they don't count you as absent and thus possibly result in truancy problems, which is something we help people with. We're a legal and educational support firm. HSLDA is the largest homeschool advocacy organization in the world, and that's what we exist to do, is to help people with those issues. But they need to communicate with their school. They need to file the paperwork that's necessary. They can get that information on our website. And then they need to go ahead and take the steps to figure out what curriculum is going to work for their children, develop a routine. I mean, the hallmark of homeschooling is flexibility.
Right.
And I really want to encourage people to embrace the flexibility that homeschooling offers.
But Mike Donnelly, to underscore, it is a parent's right to determine the educational choice of their children. They have a right to homeschool their child if they so choose.
Well, absolutely, Tony. And you know that very well as a homeschooling parent, and myself as well. I have seven children, and it's absolutely a fundamental right protected by every single state's law in the country. So everywhere in America, and that's not true in all countries around the world, by the way, and I know we can't talk about that, but every state in America, it's legal to homeschool. You have a right to do it. And it's a great option for your family.
Mike Donnelly, I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank you for the outstanding work that HSLDA does on behalf of homeschool families all across the nation.
And you, Tony, keep up the good work. Thank you so much for allowing me to talk with you and your audience today.
Absolutely. And folks, I've worked with HSLDA for literally decades, going back to when I was a legislator, and they have outstanding resources. So if this is something you're contemplating, again, I know homeschooling is not for every family, but it is for more families than you think. Great place to start is to go to HSLDA, go to their website, check out the laws in your state. And this is a journey you do not have to go on alone. There are homeschool communities everywhere, and they are eager to share their experiences with you and to assist you in the path forward for your children. So go to TonyPerkins.com and you can follow the links over to HSLDA. Now, Mike mentioned curriculum. That's what we're going to talk about next. We're going to take a look at the curriculum. How do you go about developing a plan for your children? Kathy Duffy, who's been doing this since 1984, joins us here next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics? And how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. Again, this is actually part two of a 3-part series focused on rethinking education. I know, as we talked about at the top of the program, the president wanting to see schools reopen, but he's even changing his tune a little bit, saying that if schools don't reopen, the money should follow the students, giving parents a choice in education, including homeschooling. And this is something, as we talked about just a few moments ago with Mike Donnelly, is growing rapidly across the nation and for many, many reasons. But it can be a daunting decision. And as you think through this, many parents, and I know that this was really the case with us. I graduated from public education. You think in terms of what you've experienced, and that's not the same thing as homeschooling. It's not the same structure. It's not the same. It's just different. And so, number one, as we talked about with Mike Donnelly, you got to look at the state laws, go through this about the in the right legal way, and then you begin to look at, all right, how do we shape a system that works for our kids? What's the curriculum? What's the process? Well, joining me now to talk more about this is Kathy Duffy. She is an author. She is a curriculum reviewer specialist. She has been providing reviews of homeschool curriculum for the homeschool community since 1984. She's been at this quite some time, and I'm so glad that she's joined us now. Kathy, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm glad to be with you today.
Now,
I can tell that there's so many parents interested in this by the number of people hitting our website. It's just overwhelming, the numbers. So I know there's huge need, huge interest.
Well, we were talking about the instability right now that many parents are faced with schools, kind of this hodgepodge of reopening, you know, one day in, a couple of days off, virtual learning mixed in. Parents are looking for stability for themselves and for their children. And it's not the only option, but it is a option that many are beginning to choose, and that is homeschooling. So let's talk about the process. What do they do first?
Well, I think you already mentioned the first thing is find out what your options are legally before you jump into the curriculum. Because I know I get the emails from parents, what program do I choose? Well, you need to find out how to set yourself up first in your state before you decide what program to use. If you have to work under supervision or if you have to submit materials or whatever, you know, there's so many choices of ways to do this. Find out your legal options first, then start considering what program to use. And some of that might be done in conjunction with other families. Oftentimes, parents know other parents in the same boat, and they choose to work together. This is the way homeschooling's always operated, except for the, you know, way, way back, you know, when people were hiding out in the woods. But typically, homeschool parents partner up with other parents and support each other, and sometimes you will work together to find out things. So don't, you know, I would tell parents, don't discount the value of working together with another family to compare ideas and come up with solutions, too. That can be very helpful.
And many, many states and communities have homeschool co-ops or homeschool associations where these folks are eager to share their experiences with you and help you avoid the landmines when it comes to what might be state laws or local regulations as it pertains to homeschooling.
Right. There are lots of programs and organizations that you can join that will help you through the process. You don't have to do that, but it's helpful to have somebody with some expertise there guiding you. There are people doing curriculum counseling out there, too. I've got some listed on the, you know, Parent Helps website section on my website. There's lots of help out there if you need it, but I don't want parents to get overwhelmed thinking, oh, this is oh so complicated, I can't possibly do it, because it doesn't have to be. It's new, it's different, but doesn't have to be so overwhelming. I think for a lot of parents, it's really healthy to just kind of step back and take some time to work with your kids, you know, get to know where they are educationally, do some things with them, do some writing with them, do some math games, do something with them where you get a sense of what they know, not a test, but just working with them to get a sense of where they are educationally.
Just kind of take a breath, a deep breath.
On our
previous part one, we had Candace Duggar on, and that's essentially what she said. She's like, well, you first step out, just take a deep breath and spend some time with your kids and rediscover who they are and their gifts and their abilities.
Yeah. There's that, and I think people come into homeschooling with a picture in their mind that it's going to be school at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not at all the case for, you know, most successful homeschoolers don't end up doing something that looks just like school. It's usually quite radically different.
That's a paradigm shift that has to take place.
Yes, very different way of looking at education. Instead of, you know, what do I have to do this year? What does somebody tell me to do? It's flip it around to what does my child need? Because education can be done so much more efficiently when you're working in a homeschooling setting, where you identify the needs of a child and you address those instead of 60 kids or 40 kids or whatever you've got in front of
them. So how would a parent go about that process of just kind of assessing your child's needs and what in taking that first step of shaping a path forward that benefits your child and matches their particular needs and skills?
Yeah, well, there are tests out there, but I'm less reliant on those. I still think working closely with your child is the best way to do that. You know, pick out a book and have them start reading, and then you'll get a sense of how well they are reading. Oh, no, we need to work on basic phonics. They just, you know, they're not able to decode words and figure out how to sound them out. Well, that'll tell you something right up front. Play a simple math game where they're adding numbers and see how fluent they are with their addition facts. There are simple ways to get at this type of thing without getting too complicated. Just see what's going on. If you've got an older child, then maybe some more formal assessment might be useful, but typically not so much in the younger grades.
Basically just spending time with your child.
I think one of the most valuable things is just having them do a writing sample. Have them write a paragraph for you about something. Take a look at, you know, how well can they write. That tells you a lot about their language arts skills. You know, simple things.
Candy, we're up against a break. Stay right there. I want to come back and continue this conversation as we explore the path forward for parents who might be rethinking public education and considering homeschooling as an option. Kathy Duffy, my guest, homeschool curriculum expert. She's here next, and we continue the conversation. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has released a new 3-part series titled Three Ways to Read the Bible. In this series, Patrina Mosley, FRC's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy, shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth through studying and applying the Bible's text. Now's the time to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible and learning what it says about God, humanity, and the power of Scripture. During this season of isolation, devote time to the Lord and seek out His meaning for you. In times of crisis and any time, this blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through His Word. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but your heart. To learn more, visit frcblog.com. That's frcblog.com.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and you're listening to a special. This is a part two of a 3-part series that we're doing on rethinking education. And by the way, if you missed the first part, I would encourage you to go to TonyPerkins.com and listen to that. That's kind of the what's really happening in public education. Today focused on one option. There are others, but one option is homeschooling. And joining us now as we continue our conversation on the path that parents might choose to go forward into homeschooling is Kathy Duffy. She is an expert on homeschool curriculum. She's been doing this since 1984. Okay, Kathy, so we established the first step is that parents need to look at the laws, and HSLDA has resources available for them to find out what's required in their states. Then take a step back, do an assessment of your child just by spending time with them, see where they're at academically, where they're at emotionally, and then you begin the process of developing the educational curriculum, if you will. So what's that look like?
Right. Well, that's largely why I started doing my website and writing books, helping people figure out those steps for choosing curriculum, because parents need to set their own goals. If you're not doing, you're not the tool of the public school system now. You're for yourself. What do you think is important for your child to learn? Paying attention to what might be required down the road, but setting those goals, and then looking at what approaches to education you want to use. And I walk people through this. I have a book, How to Choose Homeschool Curriculum. It's an expensive ebook you can get on my website. But it walks through a questionnaire and different tools to help people sort this out, because there are lots more ways to approach education than what they've experienced in the public schools, or in private schools for that matter, too. And when parents have that information, then they can also look at their children's learning styles. How do they learn most efficiently? And their own teaching styles. Parents sometimes forget, some of us are very organized, structured. We want it all laid out for us. Some of us are very carefree. We want to do the field trips and the fun stuff. We need to take that into account when we're choosing the curriculum so that it's something that we enjoy doing and it works for our children. So it's a, you know, lots of moving pieces here to put together. And so that's why I try to walk people through that. And then on my website, you know, it's all free on my website where they can go in and use, there's an advanced search tool where they can put in those features that they're looking for, the different approaches to education and learning styles and things.
And by the way, I've gone to your website. You've got a great website. So, folks, I would highly recommend you go to Kathy's website. It's got a lot of resources there for you.
Yeah, it's KathyDuffyReviews.com. Very simple. There's thousands of reviews. I've lost track of how many. But it will sort down through all of the reviews because it's overwhelming if you just start going through reading reviews.
Right.
I urge people use the search tool to help narrow down what's going to work for you.
Kathy, you touched on this earlier, but I wanted you to go a little deeper on this topic because many parents are saying, I'm not a teacher. I'm not qualified to teach my child. I'm afraid that I'll just fail at this. It's not that difficult.
Yeah. No, it's not. And I think parents underestimate you loving your child and paying attention, dedicating time to this. This isn't something you can just do in 15 minutes a day. And you can't just count on putting them in front of a computer and letting them do computerized education all day. That's not going to be good education. So it takes parents paying attention to what's going on with their children to really be successful at this. I'm not saying that computerized education doesn't work. It's got its place. But to count on only that isn't good. So, but there are lots of things out there, and I would encourage parents not to jump off and buy expensive programs to start with. There are free things. There's an amazing amount of free curriculum out there. Things like Easy Peasy and Plain and Not So Plain and math courses. There's math courses that are free that are as good as anything you pay for. Online games and tools you can use. I just finished reviewing, it's Arcademia. just free games to play. If your children are losing their math fact skills, put them on that site. They have a basic plan free. Use those things to get yourself going and find out what's going on with your kids and as part of the curriculum. Don't have to spend a fortune to do this.
And a lot is learned just by spending time with your kids and them spending time with you. That's a part of the socialization, but it's also a part of them learning life skills that are just as important.
Yeah, and people discount some of the simple things. Getting a good book and reading it aloud and discussing it with your child is a valuable way to educate your child. There's so many things we can do that aren't complicated. I think the simpler it is, the better in most cases.
Yeah.
If we try to replicate school at home, we're going to just frustrate and wear ourselves out, and not our children won't enjoy it. That's bottom line.
Sometimes simple is better. Kathy Duffy,
absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you spending time with us today.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
And folks, be sure and check out our website. You can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. But it is a good website. Lots of resources there for you. A great tool for those families that are contemplating making the choice of homeschooling. All right, we continue. Next, a special interview. I'm not going to tell you who yet. But a special interview on a family's journey into homeschooling, the trials and the triumphs. That's next here on this special edition of Washington Watch as we look at rethinking education. Don't go away. We're coming back with more right after this.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increased pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/sexuality. Again, that's frc.org/sexuality.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com.
With horrifying acceleration in recent years, verified reports of murders, rapes, mutilations, and kidnapping of Christians in Nigeria have persistently increased. These attacks are frequently accompanied by the torching of homes, churches, villages, and agricultural fields. A July 15, 2020 headline reports that over 1,000 Nigerian Christians were killed in the first 6 months of 2020. This is in addition to 11,000 Christians who have been killed since June 2015. News stories about the assaults in Nigeria are rarely reported in mainstream media outlets. But when they are, they're regularly explained away as effects of climate change, local feuds, or religious wars for which both sides bear equal responsibility. For more information about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria, read FRC's publication, The Crisis of Christian Persecution in Nigeria, at frc.org/Nigeria.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us as we continue in our special program on rethinking education. This is part two in what's going to be a three-part series. And as I mentioned, I've got a special guest I'm going to introduce in just a moment. But also, we have a resource available for you that, regardless of what you're going to do in terms of education, but it's a prayer guide, a 30-day prayer guide as our kids head back to school, whether it's back in the public schools, whether it's in private school, homeschool, doesn't matter. Kids still need prayer. So check that out. Go to TonyPerkins.com and download that. Share it with your friends as well. It's a great, great tool to use as we're praying for our children and our nation as kids head back to the classroom. Now, before I introduce our last guest, a special guest, for those watching, you can actually see, but I'm going to hold it for those that are just listening. But years ago, back in the early 90s, I was a television reporter. And one of my first assignments as a reporter was to do a story on homeschooling. I never really heard about homeschooling. We had just had our first child. In fact, I think she was just about 6 months old at the time. And I did this story. I went and interviewed a family, had five kids. In fact, one of the boys, who was 12 years old at the time, went on to become chief of staff for a member of Congress, chief of staff for a governor. And we've seen homeschool kids populate the political environment and landscape quite significantly. But I was intrigued by it, and I did a story on the socialization because that was one of the things we had heard that had been reported, that homeschool kids were not well socialized. Well, I did this story, and it came out of there was a study that came out of Florida at one of the universities that actually showed the contrary to that. The homeschool kids were more socialized. I became intrigued with it, and I went home to share what I had learned with my wife and said, you know what? We ought to consider homeschooling when our daughter is old enough to go to school. And so joining me now to tell me what her response was is my special guest. It's actually my wife of 34 years, Luana Perkins. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
I know you've listened many times. I think you've been on once before. But let's go back to that conversation. When I came home all excited about what I had discovered about this concept of homeschooling, something we'd never talked about, never actually heard about, how did you respond?
I said, no way, that's weird.
And that was based on?
Not really knowing homeschoolers, just what I had heard about homeschooling. It wasn't what normal people did.
Right. And it was a lot of that stuff that was set out there. You just hear, you don't really know, you just kind of hear it, you never delve into it. So I dropped it like a good husband. Never said anything else about it, and our oldest daughter went to a church preschool, and then it came time for her to go to school. And I think we were, what, a week away?
She was already registered.
She was registered
for first grade.
And why did you decide not to put her on the bus and homeschool her instead?
Well, we had her registered for a private school, and it was a good Christian school. Small school, had great teachers, great faculty, great principal. But about a week out, the Lord just said, this is not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to homeschool. And so I came to you and said, I think we're supposed to homeschool. Of course, you were excited about it. I was a little nervous about it, but we did. And I know in your previous segments, we're talking about COVID being an impetus for people wanting to homeschool. But back in 1997, I wasn't wanting to homeschool because of a pandemic. Even in 1997, at least here in Louisiana, we didn't have sex ed in schools. We didn't have socialism, Marxism being taught. We didn't have those things that I would consider so offensive being taught in our school. So
that's because you had a good state representative back
then.
That's right. That's when I was in the legislature.
But those are not reasons why I chose to homeschool. I chose to homeschool because the Lord said, this is what you're supposed to do. And we're in our 23rd year of homeschooling. And
not the same kid.
Not the same child. Thank goodness. I've homeschooled four. I'm on my last one. But we homeschooled, like I said, because the Lord told us to. And, you know, the Lord knows. You were not at FRC at that time, but since you've been at Family Research Council, you've been able to travel around. And because we are homeschooling, we've been able to travel as a family with you. And that has been absolutely wonderful.
Let's talk a little bit. You know, when I came home, mentioned to you the first time, the reaction was, I mean, it wasn't slow in coming. It was immediate. And it was so strong that I just dropped the topic, and we didn't even talk about it. What criticisms did you face when we made that decision to homeschool?
Well, at that time, the most criticism that I heard was, what about socialization? How will your children ever learn to get along with other people? But, you know, and when you know that this is what you're supposed to do, you just do it. But I'll tell you, socialization begins at home. Home is where we learn to interact with others, our parents, our siblings. It's where we learn to be loving and kind. And it's where we learn to stand our ground when our brother or sister isn't being so kind and loving to us. And when children are mean, it's where parents correct bad behavior, because parents love their children and they want them to become good and kind adults. It's where we learn to help each other. Socialization, good socialization skills taught at home will naturally flow out of our children when they're out in the community.
Now, you are by training, a social worker. You have your master's in social work. And so we took some psychology classes together when we were at LSU. But socialization is really more emulation. I mean, we emulate those that we see. And so when you have kids that are emulating other kids, you know, it's usually not good behavior. But what we have found with our kids, I hear this all the time because our kids have grown up around adults and, you know, they sit through a banquet, a dinner. They have conversations with adults about adult things.
Right.
And, I mean, that socialization, is it not? We're training them to be effective, active listeners, but also responsible citizens.
Exactly. And what I've found, not just with our own children, but with other homeschool children, is that because they learn to interact with not just their age group, not just their peers, they learn to interact with their siblings, with parents, with other adults. They are comfortable talking to other adults. My oldest son, he just made a presentation to a finance committee at a church on putting together an internet package. And, you know, he's comfortable doing that because he has grown up around adults and is able to converse with them.
You're listening to Washington Watch. This is part two in a special series on rethinking education today, focused on homeschooling. But our next edition is going to be focused on other educational options. So this is not the only one, but it's one to consider. Joining me in this last segment, my wife of 34 years, LaWanna Perkins. We're discussing our journey of homeschooling. And before we run out of time, I want to get to some of the bigger questions here that I think people want to know about. Is number one, what are the benefits of homeschooling? I mean, how has that benefited our children and you and us as parents?
Well, I'd have to say, to me, there are many, many benefits of homeschooling. Relationship building. Me and my children are able to, we talk about everything. My kids come to me, they discuss life, they discuss all kinds of things with me. We can talk. But I think the biggest benefit to homeschooling our children is that we get to shape our children's minds and our hearts. Not the state, not the government, not the prevailing philosophies of Marxism and socialism and the godlessness that's so prevalent in the public schools. And when I talk about shaping our children's hearts and minds, we do this by spending time together. We discuss things we learn, and current events. You know, we don't shelter our kids. They know what's going on in the world. But we discuss these events in light of God's word.
And the, you know, as we now have, technically, we have four adult children.
Right.
But they all continue to enjoy being together as a family.
Right.
And we do things together as a family. We enjoy one another's company. We enjoy the conversations that we have. And it's, you know, I don't want to in any way suggest that we're a perfect family, we've got perfect kids. We've had our own challenges. But I will say, as I've talked to others who, you know, talk about these sleepless nights worrying about their kids and where they're at and what they're doing and where they're going, all five of our children know the Lord. They're walking with Him. They're on that journey of faith. And, you know, we've not had those sleepless nights. Of course, we know where the kids are. They're at home. But the it's been exciting to see them grow. And it's been exciting to me as a dad as I've kind of taken them on as disciples to disciple them and watch as they become adults to be able to have really deep conversations about their faith. And you talked about the issues, but the integration of their faith and the issues of our day. So it's not, we're passing the baton. It's not our faith that we've, you know, that they're having to live under. It's their faith that we have walked with them through. And we've not had, what's been so great for me in these 17 years as I commute back and forth from Washington to Louisiana, that I don't have to deprogram them at the end of the week from what they were told by a teacher or what a textbook said, because there was consistency in that biblical worldview in every aspect of their education.
All right.
So, LaWanna, before we wrap up, what advice would you give to our listeners about homeschooling, given your 23 years of experience?
Well, the one thing I've learned, and the advice that I would give to parents who are contemplating homeschooling, who are just starting homeschooling, or you've been on your homeschool journey for a number of years, is that you need to have a goal. What is your goal for homeschooling? You know, we have goals. We have lesson plan goals. We have yearly goals. But what is the goal that you're ultimately reaching for by homeschooling your children? Have you thought about it? My goal for my children at the end of their homeschooling years is to love the Lord their God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength. And have I, as a parent, done all that I could do to accomplish this? The other thing is protecting them from indoctrination into Marxism and socialism and deviant behavior. That doesn't mean that we don't teach those things, but we teach them to think critically and biblically through these different philosophies. And goals like this will help you stay the course and not quit. Many days I wanted to quit. I even said, "I quit." And my kids threw up their hands and clapped and said, "Yay, no more school." But then the Lord reminded me, I came to my senses. He reminded me of my goal. And then we started the next day again.
One thing you always said that I think someone shared with you that I think is important to underscore is that, you know, you've been doing this for 23 years. So pretty soon you'll get a pretty good retirement, I would hope. And I'm going to retire with you. But it's one year at a time. It's not like, all right, we're going to do this for 12 years and we're just going to gut it out. It's like, okay, let's just get through this year. Or actually, I guess sometimes just get through
the day.
But it is challenging. But anything worth doing that has eternal significance is going to come with opposition.
Right, right. And that's the way I looked at it in the very beginning was, I'm homeschooling this year, and we'll see what the Lord has for next year. And but I'm at a place right now where I believe that that's just what I'm supposed to do for the rest of Samuel's homeschooling. And so that's what we do day by day. And just remember the goal that we're looking at.
And again, you know, it's a you have the goals, but just take it one step at a time.
Right.
Don't try to bite off the entire education of your children. You know, we've had a lot of homeschool friends that they homeschooled for the elementary school years, maybe the junior high.
Sure.
Years.
And Kathy Duffy talked about this in one of your last segment. There are so many options available for homeschooling. I can't teach everything. I can't teach Latin. I can't teach physics. I don't have to. If I want to, I can learn them along with my children. But we've outsourced those things. My kids have had teachers. They've had co-ops where parents get together and help teach other children. There are so many options available out there.
Lots of options. LaWanna Perkins, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for 34 wonderful years.
Thank you.
It's not often I get to do this, but I'm going to kiss my guest. And folks...
Often? Not often?
Well, I guess not often. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6. It says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.